Gar and I, as you know, as we sit here together and talk about this, we understand accountability, and we are accountable for what this team did this year. We don't run away from it. We accept it. That's on us.
Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA, your number one source for Chicago Bulls news and stories.
For me to be here in the NBA organization, such a historic organization, the Chicago Bulls, so it's just a dream come true for me.
Live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday.
This is going to be a process. You'll snap your fingers and it all happens at once, but that's the plan moving forward.
So kick back, relax, and get ready for the best hour of your day. Locked On Bulls starts now. Here are your hosts, Jordan Malley and Matt Peck.
What's up and welcome into Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. I'm Jordan Malley along with Matt Peck. We're live on Dash Radio, dashradio.com, and the Dash Radio app. On the Nothing But Net channel, live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. Follow us on social media. Follow us on Twitter at Locked On Bulls, at Jordan C. Malley, and at Bulls underscore Peck. Like us on Facebook at facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls. Subscribe to the show on iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Spotify, Google Play, and anywhere you find podcasts, you will find us. Make sure to follow the Locked On Podcast Network on Facebook and Twitter as well. We want to remind you guys right off the bat on this show that we are giving away two tickets. One lucky person will be able to win two tickets for them and a guest to join Matt and myself at the Bulls game as Jimmy Butler, Taj Gibson, and Tom Thibodeau return to the United Center. Jimmy Butler and Taj Gibson for the first time since they were dealt on February 9th, 2017. So you can have the opportunity to win two tickets. All you got to do is simply, for 30 seconds of your time, all you got to do is give us a review, five-star review on iTunes, plus a little short comment if you'd like, and then screenshot that, send it to lockedonbulls@gmail.com, and you will all be automatically entered to win. This is going to be a really fun night. Like we said before on yesterday's episode, if you missed it, were we even willing to, you know, transportation isn't involved here, but obviously we're going to buy you a couple beers, obviously, if you're over 21. I'm not trying to go to jail for anybody that's under 21 if they do.
We do not support underage drinking on the Locked On Bulls program.
Oh, man. Okay. But yes, if you are over the age of 21, we will definitely be sharing a couple brews with you. It's going to be a great night. It's a Friday night, too, as well. The United Center is going to be packed. So for 30 seconds of your time to leave us a review on iTunes to potentially win a ticket for you and a friend to join Matt and I on February 9th, it's going to be an awesome experience. It's going to be a lot of fun.
It's going to be great. I can't wait. Mostly, I want to be in the same room as Tom Thibodeau because I miss him. I know Bulls fans have their different opinions on Tibbs, but oh my gosh, before we get to our interview with Casey Johnson, Jordan, did you see that great little video clip of Nick Friedell?
Oh, I love
it. Who was on our show last week asking Tibbs that question about whether or not Jimmy Butler had an MRI. And Tim's response was, well, he may have. And then Nick Friedell just lost it. Just totally, you know, he's holding the mic up to Tim's face and he just turns around and laughs for a good 30 seconds.
He literally asked him twice, too. He asked him twice. He's like, okay, he didn't answer the first time. So he's like, okay, so did Jimmy have the MRI or not? And then Tom's like, well, you know, I don't know. It's like a John Fox kind of mumble, like, I don't know. So I thought it was great,
It was a wonderful nostalgic moment, and I just liked it so much. And it'll be really fun to get to be at that game with Jimmy Buckets and Taj and Tibbs, the whole crew. And Jordan and I are really looking forward to taking a couple of our loyal Locked On Bulls listeners to the Madhouse with us. Should be a lot of fun.
So we don't want to delay you guys from listening to all the content we had with Casey Johnson, but there was one thing that absolutely infuriated me last night that was released. This was on a Snapchat story, and actually it was a long feature column then. The Bleacher Report had talked about the Chicago Bulls, and you know what? People have their biases, their opinions about certain news sources, and that's cool. And I like a lot of the stuff Bleacher Report does, and there's some stuff that absolutely infuriates me and frustrates me. But Matt, I got to read this to you because this is the most ridiculous absolute bullshit thing I've ever read that's come out about the Chicago Bulls probably in the last 5-10 years. So let me read this real fast. Zach LaVine knows what you're thinking. You're thinking, sure, he's cool with his 2 slam dunk contest titles and his fat new Adidas contract, but he's not the real deal, not a go-to guy, not worthy of headlining the return package for a superstar. He knows this because it's all anybody in Chicago talked about or wrote about all summer, and even spent their money on in the case of a certain charity-funded billboard that went up along Central Lake Street in July. It demanded the firing of Bulls executive duo Gar Foreman and John Paxson, a direct protest to their acquisition of LaVine. The project raised nearly $7,000 in just 3 days. The sign's punchline, hashtag fire Gar Pax, sometimes trends on Twitter in the Windy City. This is the biggest garbage lead-in to a story I have ever read in my entire life. You literally have to know zero about Chicago basketball to say that Zach LaVine was the direct reflect of that billboard going up in July. Like, whatever your feelings are, I know, Matt, you hate the apps, hate the billboard. I donated to the billboard. But the fact alone that they would lead a story into people across the nation that maybe not aren't as tapped in to the Chicago Bulls is such a misleading lead into a story about Zach LaVine. And I was absolutely infuriated because that's not at all the reason why the billboard was put up in July and was not the reason why people funded this either. And it's just nobody had a problem, and it wasn't a direct reflection on Zach LaVine and getting him for Jimmy Butler. So I was just so infuriated by reading that. And I wanted to honestly puke because it was just hot garbage.
Yeah. I mean, there is so much previous frustration before that Butler trade happened. That was the impetus for the fire Gar Pax movement. I mean, like what? Like, I mean, I've got an issue with Bleacher Report in that it seems like at least in the early stages, they tried to do good reporting, fast breaking news reporting, and good analytical long form stuff. And they kind of dabbled in all of those realms. And I thought for the most part, they did it well. With, you know, and it's something we talked to Casey Johnson about just now. It's like in the world of social media now, it's so much. This is something Steve Kerr talked about too when he was asked about the Ball family recently in like a Warrior shoot around. It's all about, you know, over glittered quote unquote content that's not actually content. And it's just, hey, here's an eye grabbing headline. There's no truth to it. And there's, you know, there's really no point in discussing it. But hey, here's an eye grabbing headline, or here's an eye popping video that really is not going to teach me anything. It's not going to make me form my own contradictory opinion because it's just a dumb opinion or a dumb take. And the only thing that I will have to say about it is, wow, that's a dumb take. But it'll get umpteen thousand retweets and quotes and comments because it's a dumb take that's, you know, wrapped in a pretty package, to quote Steve Kerr. It's really frustrating when that kind of crap gets a lot of attention.
So we got our guest coming up here, and we want to get straight to that. Chicago, longtime Chicago Tribune Bulls beat writer Casey Johnson. Always an excellent talk with him. And we had great conversation touching on everything and anything you could possibly want from the Chicago Bulls. So without further ado, let's get right to that interview with the Chicago Tribune's Bulls beat writer, Casey Johnson.
Right now, we're very pleased to welcome to Locked On Bulls for the first time, Mr. Casey Johnson. You know him. You read his stuff at the Chicago Tribune. You can follow him on Twitter for all things Bulls at KCJ Hoop. Casey, what's going on, man?
Hey, how you guys doing?
Doing well. Let's first get your thoughts on this double OT extravaganza against the Pelicans last night. Obviously a monster game for Boogie Cousins, putting up a 40-20-10 line that we haven't seen since the likes of Wilt Chamberlain and Oscar Robertson, kind of overshadowing some strong performances from these young Bulls, who, you know, despite being in charge most of that game, managed to cough it up. Some Bulls fans will look at it and say, hey, great, tank win. But what was your biggest takeaway from that game against the Pels last night?
Yeah, I mean, obviously you can't overlook Boogie. I mean, when he puts up a historic line like that, it's one of those games that transcends the norm. I mean, no doubt, beyond the double overtime, that line is just something you haven't seen often in the league. So pretty amazing game by him. You know, as far as the Bulls are concerned, it was a weird game, obviously, because you had guys who played so well for the majority of that game, and then, you know, kind of shrink in the big moments. Jaron Grant had a wonderful game through three quarters and then really struggled with ball security, obviously, down the stretch. you know, and then a big thing as far as the core and what it means moving forward, I thought Markkanen had a wonderful game. He continues to show this ability to exploit matchups, and he was taking smaller guys into the post and driving to the hole repeatedly. And defensively, he continues to really, really shine, particularly in isolation. He's got great footwork for someone his size, and at 20 years old, I think can only get obviously better defensively.
So just touching on this game too, it was a wild finish last night. I wanted to touch on maybe Zach LaVine's play as well, as, you know, this is sort of his first handful of games back in the NBA. Maybe in general, or what you saw last night, what's the most positive thing, I guess, coming out of Zach LaVine that you've seen in the handful of games that he's returned to the court with the Bulls so far?
Well, the biggest thing is just how athletic he looks. I mean, to me, he just, you know, you don't even, obviously the knee is something you're still monitoring, and he remains on a minutes limit. But if you were to take someone who had no idea he tore an ACL, and that person was not aware of the minutes restriction, that person just watched Zach LaVine play basketball for, you know, his first quarter stint or what have you, that person would say there's an incredibly athletic player. And that is, to me, the big thing that jumps out through the first five games. You don't really pay attention to his stats, although he had very good ones last night and obviously got to the rim and had a couple dunks. But even the games where he shot the ball poorly in those back-to-back games, just the fact that he's moving well, looks athletic, looks fluid, and is finding his rhythm, that has got to be encouraging for anybody who's a fan of the Bulls.
Casey, you mentioned the minutes limit that LaVine has been playing under since he came back, just right around 19 or 20 minutes in his first few games. That was increased minimally to about 24 minutes in the past few games. Do you see that increasing even more significantly? Like, do you see that exponentially increasing in the near future? Because it sounds like every time we hear from Zach LaVine, he's saying, I'm ready for more minutes. I want to play more minutes. Seemed like he was kind of disappointed that he didn't get any of that action in either of the OT sessions last night.
Well, yeah, I do expect that because it's what John Paxson said. And John Paxson laid it out very clearly the day that he was medically cleared to debut at home against the Pistons. And that was, you know, they're going to take this on a week-to-week basis. And in the first week, using those 20-minute limit without playing the fourth quarter, and cleared that with no problem. And so I obviously got bumped up to 24 minutes in some fourth quarter action, which happened not in Atlanta, but it did happen in New Orleans. And so Philadelphia will be game three and close to the end of the second week of this segment. So I would expect then another conferral with doctors and trainers. And, you know, there haven't been any setbacks at this point. So I would think that would be bumped up to 28. Maybe even 30 minutes. And, you know, ideally you're going to see this guy by the end of the season playing 32, 34 minutes a night. I don't think they're going to go beyond that, just given what this season means in the grand scheme of things and just Zach finding his rhythm. But look, Zach LaVine's going to get a half season of basketball under his belt. That's fantastic from a Bulls standpoint, and the future of the franchise, because obviously it's about him, Markkanen, and Dunn moving forward.
Speaking of the future of the franchise, the question that's on every Bulls fan's mind right now is, what in God's name is going on with Nico Mirotic? In the column you put out just a little bit ago earlier this afternoon, you once again confirmed the Bulls are still likely to trade him. But we've also heard John Paxson say, look, we won't trade him just to trade him. If we're going to make a trade, it has to be something that benefits the team moving forward. We've heard other reports saying the Bulls are determined to get a first-round draft pick for Nico. We've heard teams like Utah, Portland, and Detroit expressing interest. I mean, what is the latest that you're hearing? Because for a while, it sounded like once that January 15th date came around, he was as good as gone. Here we are. It's more than a week later, and Nico's still in Chicago.
Oh, this is a deadline-driven league, and, you know, nothing to me really gets serious. I mean, obviously, trades have happened historically before the trade deadline, but look, the whole league knows that the Bulls, you know, have made it clear they're going to be listening to offers for Mirotić. And the whole league also knows that Mirotić has made it clear to the Bulls that he wants to be elsewhere, at least away from Bobby Portis. So, you know, right now, it's you can't really bargain in good faith because there's not much leverage. And until you get a deadline squaring teams in the face, then things get serious. So I would certainly expect activity to pick up between now and February 8th. You know, the other thing to keep in mind with Mirotić is that contract was structured to be traded. I mean, that's really the structure of that contract, whether the fight with Bobby Portis happened or not. That was a very appealing contract, you know, for other teams, and the Bulls signed him to that with that in mind, that that could be potentially a trade chip. Now, you can certainly flip that argument and say he's only 26 and he's the prototypical big man for today's NBA. But I keep maintaining, and this is not my reporting, this is just my personal opinion, I'm just not sure if he fits with the timeline of the rebuild, given that you still need another impact player beyond the core. I don't think Dunn, Levine, and Markkanen make you a championship team. I could be wrong. That's just my personal opinion at this point. So you need another impact player, and if you're paying Levine this summer, Dunn in a couple summers, and Markkanen in 3 summers from now, I mean, Mirotić is going to be looking for $20 million or so in the summer of 19. So I just don't see how all that squares. But again, I'm not a general manager. I'm just a beat writer and observer. So we'll see what happens. But I do think Nico will be elsewhere, whether that happens by the February trade deadline or maybe in the June draft. I can't answer that at this point.
And then the other names on the Bulls roster that have been mentioned in trade talks, Robin Lopez, Justin Holiday, Jaren Grant, anything specific you've heard about those three players and whether or not the Bulls are continuing to shop them or at least gauge interest on them on the trade market?
Yeah, I mean, the Bulls are open for business. I mean, we all, you know, they've made it clear that they're in a rebuild and, you know, first round picks are the gold currency in today's NBA, particularly for young rebuilding teams. The Bulls also are in a good financial situation where they can take on money if need be to absorb maybe a bad short-term contract and get a first-round pick. So I don't think there's going to be a fire sale. I mean, they value all those guys, and they have also talked about the need to have the right veterans around. But part of the reason for having those veterans around was they did not think that these young players knew how to win. It's very hard to learn how to win consistently in the NBA when you're a young player, and I'm not saying they've, you know, turn the corner fully on that. Last night, the prime example of the Bulls blowing a commanding lead late. However, I also think Dunn and Markkanen have proven pretty consistently that they're not afraid of the big moment, and they have been able to make some big plays in crunch time. So I don't really think they need veterans per se to hold their hand or what have you, or show them the proper ways. I think Markkanen and Dunn are pretty serious about winning. So if the right deal presents itself, I think anybody's available. But I don't think they're gonna be selling off people. You know, John Paxson has also been very clear that they're not gonna go into a fire sale mode and purposely try to tank. I mean, I think John's been pretty direct about the tanking talk. He said, you know, nobody tries to tank, and we want to develop the young core, and that's what they're doing with Dunn, Markkanen, and Levine.
Casey, as we're talking about sort of the value that the Bulls have and some of these assets that the Bulls could sell off before the deadline, over the last 12 hours or so, we have seen some drama with a bunch of different players and teams across the NBA, and I'm curious to get your insight on this. If Cleveland, with the dismay that's going on in Cleveland right now, and if they're active in talks, maybe even pursuing a trade for Kevin Love or something like that, and maybe some of these other stars that might be moved at the deadline, how would that affect sort of the value, or I guess the leverage the Bulls would have in terms of maybe moving a guy like Robin Lopez to a team like Cleveland who is desperate for rebounding right now, or moving Nico Mirotić, who's looking for a stretch four that can shoot? If Kevin Love's on the market, and not saying that he is or isn't taking calls from Cleveland right now, how does that sort of affect Nico's value up into the trade deadline?
Well, like you said, I mean, I haven't heard that Kevin Love's on the market. In fact, I guess Tyronn Lue came out today saying it's kind of silly that he's the target of all this, you know, disgruntlement or whatever from this team meeting. So, I mean, look, they're not going to, who knows if they're going to come out of the East anyway, but they're certainly not going to come out of the East if they trade Kevin Love. So, I kind of think they're mutually exclusive subjects, quite frankly. And, you know, Cleveland's already, there's been several reports linking them to some names, and none, the Bulls haven't been mentioned in any of them. So, again, things can change between now and the deadline. But, you know, I do think the Lopez thing in particular, that's been, you know, that's been somewhat media created, just in the sense that he's obviously a veteran on a manageable deal.
Mm-hmm.
I've written it as much as anybody. I mean, at the start of the season, I thought that Robin would be a viable candidate to be traded. But you also got to remember, in today's day, you know, true centers aren't a hot commodity. I mean, so I'm not saying he won't get dealt, but I haven't heard much chatter with Robin as of us talking right now.
Casey, I want to get to your column from today on Tuesday. You just published it just a short while ago. It reads, Bulls could have a brief stay in the lottery land. And you go through and talk about some of the teams that have spent the last 5 to 10 seasons hanging out in the lottery and sort of what it's played for them, how it's played out for them. And we had this conversation with some teams early on in the season when the Bulls were struggling, going 3-20. We talked about a team like Charlotte, who's hung out in the lottery for the past 5, 6, 7 years, and has yet to strike on that franchise changing talent. Can you kind of explain to Bulls fans what you mean by the Bulls could have a short stint here in the lottery land, and how this this sort of leg up on the rebuild, like John Paxson and Gar Forman have talked about, how that could play to the Bulls' advantage, and maybe fans should maybe take a look at not wanting to tank for multiple years in a row?
Well, it's kind of, you know, management's, I think, played this pretty well, because they never put a timeline on this rebuild. And look, you also got to hold them to the fire a little bit, in the sense that when they made that Jimmy Butler trade, I'm not letting them off the hook in this sense, because when they made that Jimmy Butler trade, they absolutely had a top 3, 4, 5 pick in mind as another benefit to that trade. And, you know, it still could happen. There's a lot of games to be played, guys. And, you know, we have no idea how the lottery is going to play out. I have a hilarious anecdote that I think I shared in a mailbag many years ago, that I wasn't even watching the Derrick Rose draft lottery because they had so few odds to cash in. My kid was so young. I was like hanging out with my kid on a rug. He was drooling. All of a sudden my phone started blowing up, you know, it's like, so I mean, you know, a lot can happen between now and May 15th. But that said, the only point that I was trying to make in the column is that, you know, and Gar Forman has said this publicly several times, that they've studied rebuilds, and historically, when teams go in the lottery, they're in there usually for an average of 4 to 6 years. And they felt like when they made the Butler trade, they landed 3 pieces that could make this a shorter stay for them. And I'm not saying it's for sure going to happen, but it's certainly looking like they're not going to be in the lottery very long. They're certainly, you know, I think it's going to be a huge stretch for them to have the worst record this season, obviously, especially the way they're playing. So it's going to take them either hitting on a mid-level, or, you know, just outside the top 5 draft pick, you know, Steph Curry went 7, Giannis went 15, et cetera, or it's going to have to take them landing another impact player via trade or free agency. So, you know, there's a lot of ways to build a team, and look, DeAndre Ayton or Bagley or what have you would look fantastic in a Bulls uniform. And we still don't know how it's going to play out, but they do feel that when they made this trade, they felt they had an opportunity to kind of rebuild this pretty quickly on the fly. And look, they're not anywhere near a championship team yet. They obviously have a nice foundational core right now, and they've showed a lot of positive signs this season, not only in terms of how hard they've competed, but their style of play more fully aligning with today's NBA. But they're not sitting back, you know, with their hands behind their head counting their you know, championship chips. The management and the franchise knows they still have a long way to go.
Well, to that end, Casey, as we're talking with Casey Johnson here on Locked On Bulls, follow him on Twitter at @KCJHoop. It's something that I've been more and more curious with as this season, or at least the most recent part of the season, the winning days, if you will, have gone on, is the perception of the Bulls front office in Chicago among the fan base, because we know that they are one of the most heavily scrutinized and heavily criticized front offices in Chicago and really in all of national sports. I mean, the FireGuard Packs hashtag has been, you know, a trending thing on Twitter for what feels like half a decade now. And it's funny because it seems like there is a large portion of the fan base that's frustrated because I think I'm pretty sure one of the Sun-Times columnists put something out about this yesterday, how the Bulls front office is even failing at failing in this, in other words, screwing up the tank by winning too many games. They also got grilled by a lot of people on draft night last year when a lot of people thought first reactions, they lost the Jimmy Butler trade and didn't get the good pieces they were looking for in return. Now, because of the strong play of guys like Dunn and Markkanen, and now we'll probably see more of those strong nights from LaVine, they are the reason that the tank isn't going according to plan. So essentially my question is, I know most Bulls fans don't have any sympathy at all for the Bulls front office because of their performance in recent years. Do you feel like they're in kind of a no-win situation here based on the fact that it's damned if you do, damned if you don't? People judge them for losing the Butler trade. It looks like they actually won the Butler trade, or at least got the right pieces. And because of that, the tanking plan isn't working.
Well, I mean, first of all, they don't need any sympathy because they make a lot of money.
So, I mean, Fair enough.
I mean, that's what I always say. Like, I remember, like, people saying, like, don't you feel bad for Fred Hoiberg his first year? No, I don't feel bad for Fred Hoiberg. He's making $5 million a year, man. So, no, look, first of all, there's a lot there. I wrote this column recently, too. There's no winner or loser in the Jimmy Butler trade. Everybody won. Every franchise, right. Both those franchises got exactly what they wanted. Jimmy Butler is playing lights out like we all knew that he would. And restoring the Timberwolves to not only respectability, but competitiveness in a loaded Western Conference. They're going to snap their playoff drought, barring some disastrous collapse. And the Bulls got three, solid core pieces to begin this rebuild. And both franchises got exactly what they wanted. There's always this rush to, like, especially in today's day and age, to, like, declare winners and losers immediately. I paid attention to all that noise on draft night. I was just laughing at it. I mean, I thought it was, I thought it was a fine trade for both teams, even the night it happened. And I would say this about the management team. You know, people can say whatever they want about it. I obviously am very well aware of how disliked they've been in recent history. I just look, I go back to covering this regime to when they first took over for Jerry Krause in 2003. They completely flipped that roster in less than 24 months. In 22 months, they changed every player but Tyson Chandler and Eddie Curry. Everyone. And they went from 23 wins to 47 wins. Now, look, this is a franchise that has won 6 world championships. That should be the measure. So has this management team failed? Yeah, they have failed to win a championship. Have they done a good job with drafting? Over their complete body of work, have they done a good job of drafting, talent acquisition, coaching hires, maybe obviously save for, they nailed Skiles, they nailed Thibodeau. I mean, I think most people, if you look at their moves objectively over years, would say they've done, more good than bad. Now, they haven't won a championship, so they've failed in that. But I just go by the other time they rebuilt. They rebuilt very well. So I was giving them the benefit of the doubt. They got a long way to go. I think they're off to a good start. And they know as well as anybody if they're going to get back to the era of winning championships from the glory years, they've got to add another stud. They don't have that right now, and they've got to figure out a way to get that.
Casey, I want to go to something, too, that, part of this trade for Jimmy Butler included, obviously, the rookie star phenom that we've all been pleasantly surprised by and excited for in Lauri Markkanen. And I know you did a story a few weeks ago when the Bulls did play the Mavs, and you were talking about Dirk Nowitzki, and the headline read, veteran who coached Dirk Nowitzki and Lauri Markkanen see similar paths for Bulls rookie. And I found this story absolutely fascinating, and I didn't do I didn't do it justice a few weeks ago when we did talk about it, but can you talk about your conversation with Henrik Detman and sort of what he had to say about Lauri Markkanen's upbringing and sort of how it paralleled to guys he's seen overseas in the past? Obviously, he's seen stars like Dirk Nowitzki turn it around and come to the NBA and be, you know, a future Hall of Famer. Can you talk about what his background was like, what he had to say about Lauri growing up and sort of the player that he thinks he's going to be in the NBA?
Yeah, so it's a slippery slope, because when you ever anybody who's now a stretch four who's European is compared to Dirk Nowitzki, and there's never going to be another Dirk Nowitzki. Lauri Markkanen said that directly in that story to me, I was hesitant to report the story and write the story until a couple things happened. I made a request to talk to Dirk, and Dirk doesn't do a lot of one-on-one interviews, and he accepted it. You have to clear the subject matter. And once he was aware of the subject matter, knowing that this guy, Henrik Detman, had coached him on the German national team and obviously also coached Lauri on the Finnish national team, he accepted the invite. So I had the pleasure of talking to Dirk down in Dallas for 5 or 7 minutes about Lauri, and he loves the guy. He absolutely gushes about the guy. So that gave me a little bit of runway and realized, all right, you know, I'm not going to write Lauri's the next Dirk, but this is worth pursuing. And then I found out that Henrik Detman was going to be at the road Knicks game in New York. He'd come over from Finland with some people from the Finnish Basketball Federation. And, he was receptive to talking to me as well. And the thing you got to be guard against here and be a little bit careful, but Henrik was very careful to point this out. He was only the German national team coach. He was not involved in the German youth program. So he was not like hands-on day-to-day with Dirk, but he did coach Dirk to a bronze medal in the World Cup in 2002, I believe. So, I mean, obviously he was around Dirk at a young age, and he's much more hands-on with Lauri from a young age. He also coached and recruited his Lowry's father, who played at Kansas, Pekka. So he's much more intimate with Lauri's game and knows Lauri's game better. And all he said is, you know, this guy, he's incredibly skilled, and there are some similarities to Dirk and his game, but there's never going to be another Dirk. And just, you know, the commitment to the game, the commitment to want to get better, the skill level, the ability to not get fazed in big moments. There's a lot of promise, and there's a lot to like here. And that's why I ended up writing and reporting that story.
I loved the story, honestly. And to follow up real quick on that, one of the things that he did say, that Henrik Detman did say, is you talk to Lauri and he has short answers. You don't get many headlines, but he's always listening. And after this October day in 2014, when he said he would finish high school in 3 years, he said that I have no doubt about where he would wind up. I knew he was on a mission. He was coachable and he wants to be better. And that's exactly what he did. So what does that tell you, I guess, about one of the intangibles that a lot of players to be great in the NBA is to have some type of leadership, some motivation, and, you know, determination to be the greatest. How does that play for you, I guess? And what was your thoughts about getting a little bit more of a background on him and understanding not just the physical skills that he has to play the game, but outside of that and what he could do for, you know, the quote unquote culture for the Bulls as they're trying to rebuild this all together? We talked about it with Zach LaVine too, and his personality is just so vibrant and how that could completely change the locker room and the way that these guys prepare for games and just the chemistry for this team. So did you get anything maybe more from Lauri Markkanen, seeing that side outside of his physical skills?
Yeah, and that's well said, because I think all three of these guys that they got in this trade have a potential, you know, to be they're fully bought into this rebuild, and they're good public faces for the organization. You know, I was talking to an executive I know from another team recently, and I think has been talked about elsewhere too, but like, a real intriguing part to this trade is you could argue which of these three players has the highest ceiling. I mean, it's a legitimate argument. I don't know the answer to it. I'm just saying it's a legitimate argument. Which ultimately of these three players is going to be the best player? Initially, when the trade was made, you would say LaVine for sure. But what you've seen from Dunn and Markkanen to this point, you might have to rethink that and I'm not saying anybody knows the answer. I'm just saying it's an interesting discussion, topic for discussion. But as far as your question specifically about Lowry, you know, I kind of already developed that sense even before talking Henrik Detman. I mean, I think it's pretty well documented that I don't watch a lot of college basketball, so I didn't know anything about Lowry Markkanen. I never saw him play in Arizona. I talked to Sean Miller and the assistant coach who recruited him to Arizona, who went on to, I want to say, Long Beach or something. I don't particularly remember his name off the top of my head. Right after the Bulls acquired him to do a long-form feature on Markkanen, and they spoke to his work ethic. And then just, you know, you start being around the guy. I was around him at summer league and training camp. You obviously may hear some stereotypes. Okay, soft European, what have you, shooter. You were just around this guy like a little bit. You could tell like he was serious. He was more physical than you probably expected. He defended better than you expected. His footwork was really strong. His commitment to rebounding in traffic was evident. So all those things were already there. And then, yeah, sure, when I had the conversation with Henrik Detman, it was even more enlightening about how serious-minded he is. But I think it also has kind of been borne out in his play. You know, like, there's been several games this season, we've all seen it, where he has maybe not shot the ball very well, but he still has not at all avoided the big moment or taken the big shot. He's rebounded on nights where he has not shot well. These are all obviously very good signs if you're a Bulls fan.
Casey, let's talk for a second about Fred Hoiberg. We've talked about the impressive and somewhat surprising performances of some of the kids they got in the Butler trade. But Paxson said also during this most recent offseason that they were going to continue to evaluate the job performance of Fred Hoiberg while still voicing their support for him, and obviously choosing to trade Butler and keep Hoiberg. Kind of, you know, Butler said it himself. It's kind of like they picked Hoiberg over me. I've been impressed. Honestly, I was a critic of Hoiberg in his first couple of seasons. Obviously, there was the element of him not having the right pieces, you know, dealing with isolation basketball, whether it was with Rose or Butler or Wade, trying to get Rondo to play his offense. Now that he has a young roster that's buying in, we're starting to see Hoiball work, whether it was, you know, this recent stretch of 10 straight games where they hit 10 or more three-pointers, something that they hadn't done in the franchise in a long, long time. I've seen Hoiberg execute some more interesting and creative ways to find open looks for Markkanen, not just behind the three-point line, but utilizing mismatches and things like that. I've been impressed with Fred Hoiberg, the X's and O's basketball coach, halfway through this season. Do you think that the Bulls front office has been equally impressed? And do you think that there is a continuing evaluation as far as if Fred Hoiberg is the guy to take this team, not just through the rebuilding process, but to eventual championship contention? And are you starting to see those signs of Hoiberg's potential as well?
I mean, I can't speak to the, you know, what management's thinking about the long-term plan for Hoiberg. I have no idea. I can tell you that John Paxson is on record publicly as saying how impressed he's been with Fred and his coaching staff this season. So I don't even need to speculate on that. I mean, anybody has seen that this team fits Fred's system much better, and it's a much, you know, whether or not they are winning a lot, it's a more, to me, aesthetically pleasing style of basketball. The ball moves, like you mentioned, the isolation basketball. I can't remember the last time there's very little isolation basketball this season, which to me is refreshing. They're more in tune, as I mentioned previously, to today's NBA with their three-point attempts. And you know, look, I thought John Paxson played this very well from the jump, because he made it clear the day of the trade, he took the pressure off of Fred with the wins and losses. He said, this staff is not going to be evaluated by the one loss record. It's going to be evaluated by player development and how hard we compete. And I think anybody that has followed this team this season would give, you know, obviously the players deserve all the credit, but would give Fred and his staff high marks in both of those areas. So sure, it's been a good season for Fred. I think I use this quote from John Paxson during this season. I think it's very well said that just like players can kind of get into a rhythm and develop confidence, coaches can too. And I think Fred's kind of feeling it a little bit. You know, he's finding some great plays, as you mentioned, and you know, he's making some good moves. I mean, this is a real subtle thing, but there was that moment last night where he called that timeout on that loose ball late when he jumped, you know, people would have not maybe thought to call a timeout on the court. He ran out on the court and called that timeout to get that key possession late. So, yeah, he's having a good year, and I know that management is pleased.
Do you think that there is a certain element of, I guess, swagger is a word you could use with Fred, or at least confidence in the way that, look, you know, this team started 3-20, but they've certainly turned things around, or, you know, 15-8 or 15-9 since then. And with a very impressive effort against the Warriors just last week, the Bulls actually won three of the four quarters. There was, you know, some talk on Twitter leading up to that contest about the cyclone play that Steve Kerr and the Warriors love to run, which is called cyclone because he actually stole it from Fred Hoiberg, who stole it from someone else, who stole it from someone else. There was that great column that made the rounds leading up to that. I mean, do you think that Hoiberg is kind of, from what you've noticed through year one and year two and now halfway into year three, established a more confident bravado in his role? Because it seemed like at certain times, whether it was after a night when Bulls ego guys in the locker room ran their mouth last season or the Bulls had a late collapse, he always kind of seemed defeated when talking to you and the other members of the Chicago media. Now, you know, he's got some tongue-in-cheek jokes that he's cracking. He's getting compliments from the head coach of the defending champion Warriors. Do you feel like Hoiberg feels an element that he's finally found himself as a guy who belongs at this level?
I'm not sure if you're from Ames, Iowa, you can have a swagger.
Fair.
I said in the previous answer, I mean, John Paxson talked about how players can find a rhythm and confidence. Coaches can too. Fred is definitely more confident. And I know for a fact that he's, I don't know if having more fun is, yeah, I wouldn't say that, having more fun. I mean, it's weird because if you look at their record, it's still worse than the last two seasons, but this has just such a more positive vibe than those first two seasons.
Yeah.
Again, style of play, people buying in. It's certainly got to be refreshing to coach a team that's receptive to your coaching. And then the biggest thing is just that they have players that fit how he wants to play. I mean, they hired him and touted his offensive dynamism, his dynamic offensive sets, and then, you know, saddle him with a bunch of ISO players. So, and non-3-point shooters, particularly last season with the lack of floor spacing. So yeah, it's been a positive vibe all around. I mean, I've said this before, like even when it was 3-20, this sounds weird. You know, there are definitely some low moments. That Golden State road loss was a debacle. The collapse at the Pacers was a debacle. But even at 3-20, and even with the Portis Miritich fight, there was like definitely a more positive feel and vibe around this locker room all season. And really, and obviously that's just growing with the way they played with Blake.
Casey, as we wrap up here, I wanted to ask you a question. So you've been with the Chicago Tribune since 1990, and you covered the second three-peat between 1996 and 98, and then you were full-time with the Bulls since 2000, other than that one season with the Bears in 2005. I'm curious to get your thoughts on how coverage has changed in the NBA as far as the style of talking to players and reporting things and just the way that social media has sort of ramped that up and ramped up the excitement for NBA fans across Twitter and social media. I feel like NBA fans out of any four major sports groups have totally dominated social media. So how has it been like you were a perfect witness to understanding this complete and utter change that social media has brought to sports, and sort of what is, I guess, the best benefit you've seen from it, and what's the worst thing that's come from it?
I always joke, it wouldn't have been crazy to have Twitter and social media during that second three-peat. No. Oh my God, I'd be like in an insane asylum right now.
Where in the world is Dennis Rodman every hour of every day?
Exactly. I don't know. I, like a lot of people, I have kind of a love-hate relationship with Twitter. I mean, I think obviously it's fantastic for news feed, for disseminating information rapidly. I don't know, but I think it's sometimes shortened attention spans, and you know, sometimes I'll get like people tweeting at me, like asking basic questions that are in the story that is in the link to the tweet. You know, that's what I do. I also write stories, you know, so like click on the link and then that question will be answered, you know. But I don't know, look, it's a great league, always has been, for access and for coverage. To me, it's always been the most dramatic in terms of storylines. It's a very soap opera-ish league. But it's also filled with really genuine people. And I've covered the NHL. I've covered the NFL just for one season. And I've only done a couple features here and there for baseball. I've never covered it daily. I would put the NBA access up with any of the major professional sports leagues. NHL is very good as well, but you know, a lot of those players aren't maybe not possessing quite the star power. I mean, the Warriors had a shoot around last week in Chicago where, you know, Kevin Durant, Draymond Green, Steph Curry, Klay Thompson, and Steve Kerr all sat around and talked for like 20 minutes, and you could just go up to any one of them. I mean, at one point, Kevin Durant had like two people around him, and he was just sitting there. And I mean, that kind of access is wonderful. And I will say that access has, even though I'm not touting how great it is, it has changed a little bit just because of the demands and the insatiable appetite for information and how social media drives that. I do think athletes have gotten a little bit more wary, obviously, and they understand the impact their words have. I mean, when I first started, you used to be able to sit around the locker room and BS with these guys all the time. And you can do that like with obviously like a young team that I'm covering, but you might not be able to do that as much with a star-laden team. The Warriors are remarkably transparent and open for their accessibility. But, you know, it's changed. You know, social media has changed some things for the good, some things for the bad. It's still a great league to cover. And I think one thing I always say is if you look around the league, there are a lot of really, really veteran NBA reporters who have either been beat writers on the same team like myself for a long time or national guys who have been around the league for a long time. And there's a reason for that. It's because, to me, it's one of the best storyline-driven leagues of the four major professional sports. And also, it's just got great access. So why would you want to leave that? Because I personally also think it's just the coolest sport there is because I have a soft spot for basketball. But, look, it's a great job, and you know, Twitter will drive me insane, but it's not going anywhere. So I gotta go down with the ship.
All right, final question, Casey. Before we let you go, you mentioned your opinion that the NBA is the best storyline driven league, and I couldn't agree more. To that end, looking outside of Chicago now, what storyline are you most excited to keep an eye on as we finish the second half of the regular season and work our way into the playoffs? I mean, we have the Cleveland drama with the LeBron team that's, you know, that can't play defense, and there's another Kevin Love conspiracy. You have reports earlier this week that somehow now maybe Kawhi Leonard wants out of San Antonio, and you know, their veteran point guard Tony Parker's moving to the bench, and you know, there's Lillard in Portland, there's Jordan talking about a Kemba Walker trade, and like kid getting fired. There's so many interesting things going on in the NBA right now. What, of all of that, like, is what's the one storyline that you're saying, man, this is going to be really exciting to watch into, you know, March and April and on into the playoffs?
To me, it's easily the Cavaliers, and it's not even so much the drama. I would have said that 2 days ago before the Love and the team meeting story broke. I just think, given how poorly they played, particularly the defensive end, they look vulnerable for the first time. And everyone just, when the season began, kind of assumed that it was going to be Warriors, Cavs all over again, and certainly very well still could be. They played very poorly defensively at times last season and then ratcheted it up in the playoffs, particularly the defensive end. So it could happen again, but they've got new parts and, you know, and different personnel. So I'm really, really curious to see how that plays out, particularly, obviously, because it then has an impact on what LeBron does in the summer, which is going to be a ridiculously, you know, crazy storyline come off season. So yeah, the storylines never end, but to me, easily the choice is the fate, I should say the fortune of the Cavaliers moving forward.
All right. Well, as always, Casey, appreciate the time. He's Casey Johnson covering the Chicago Bulls for the Chicago Tribune. Follow him on Twitter at @KCJHoop. Even though he's got a love-hate relationship with Twitter, he's always got great content. KC, thanks for the time, bud. Great chatting with you.
All right, thanks for having me on, guys. I enjoyed it.
All right, take care.
Well, that's going to about do it here on Locked On Bulls. We want to give a special thank you to Chicago Tribune and longtime Bulls beat writer KC Johnson for joining us today for an excellent conversation. You can follow him on Twitter at @KCJHoop. and follow all of his columns. Subscribe to the Chicago Tribune if you still get the newspaper, or read all of his content digitally at chicagotribune.com. Tomorrow's episode and leading into this week, we're going to have plenty more content for you guys. We'll push back this week in Bulls history, maybe tomorrow or later in the week, but we'll definitely get that to you, as well as some mailbag questions. We want to remind you guys to submit your iTunes reviews to have a chance to win two tickets, a ticket for you and a guest to join Matt and myself at the Timberwolves Bulls game on February 9th. All you got to do is submit a 5-star review. It takes literally 30 seconds. Screenshot that review and send it to lockedonbulls@gmail.com. Remember, we're live on Dash Radio, dashradio.com, and the Dash Radio app on the Nothing But Net channel. Live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. Follow us on social media at LockedOnBulls, at Jordan C. Malley, and at Bulls_Peck. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls. Subscribe to the show, iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, and anywhere you find podcasts, you'll find us. Make sure to follow the Locked On Podcast Network on Facebook and Twitter as well. For Matt and Jordan, we are out. Have a great night.
Locked On Bulls, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA. Locked On Bulls is live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, starting at 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central. For more content and to stay up to date, head over to LockedOnBulls.com, part of FanRag Sports.